As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Su. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And this episode is The Shaman and the Scientist, Hallucination. It is more or less a part two, following up on our episode, The Shaman and the Scientist, My Egoic Mind. Both of these deal with psychedelics. So just on the last podcast, just want to let everyone know off the top of the podcast, if you didn't get it from the title or the description, yes, we're going to be talking about psychedelic substances in this episode. But we're going to be talking about them largely from a scientific standpoint and from the standpoint of some very exciting and very important research that continues to go on right now into how these substances affect the human mind and what those effects can actually reveal about the inner workings of the human mind and potentially aid us in dealing with some very real mental problems, mental ailments, etc.
And again, this was born out of the exhibit for I Am the Black Jaguar, which is at Emory University. And there was a talk there that you attended with Dr. Catherine McLean and Dr. Charles Raison about this very topic.
Yes, fascinating topic. Dr. Catherine McLean involved in a lot of this exciting research at Johns Hopkins, where they're taking individuals, they're exposing them to these various psychedelic substances, and then interacting with them, getting their perspectives on what they're feeling and what's happening, looking at their brain, using radioactive tracers to observe exactly how this is affecting their mind. Lots of fascinating research. And as we discussed in the last podcast, we're in an interesting stage in the sort of ebb and flow of psychedelic research. Psychedelic research, it makes it sound kind of silly. But research into psychedelics and how they affect the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because all this sort of kicked off in the 50s, mid-50s, but by the end of the 60s took a dive to basically nothing because of the politics and the cultural
backlash.
Yeah. And it didn't really pick up again until the 90s and finally achieving some level of steam again in the dawn of the 21st century.
But, of course, a lot of these substances have been in use for thousands of years through shamanic practices in various parts of the world. What we're talking about here are entheogenic substances.
Right.
Psychoactive substances used in religious or spiritual contexts.
Yeah. To put it in a Simpsons standpoint, Homer Simpson takes peyote And then he talks to a space coyote that talks to him and helps him deal with his problems. That's kind of, I mean, that's the pop culture Simpsons simplified version of shamanic experience, where some wise person, a holy man or woman in a traditional setting that also, you know, probably engages in various cultural traditional medicines, they give you a magical substance, one of these, you know, the mushroom or the vine of ayahuasca, and then you take it. The shaman probably takes it too, probably in higher doses, and then guides you on the experience.
Yeah, and actually I had read that shamans were sometimes picked for their ability to bring on these states of these altered states of consciousness by doing it actually just on their very own and not necessarily using any sort of substances. So they were definitely looking for people who had this ability to expand their minds and to access a part of their minds that we don't normally use during the day, right? Or throughout the day, I should say. So here's this idea that comes online that perhaps hallucinating is natural to humans, right? Because you've had it in these rituals for thousands of years. You've had it in practice in this attempt to try to get a better understanding of our place in the world. But also you have something called DMT, which is naturally occurring in nature.
Dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah.
And this was first synthesized by British chemists in the 1930s. It has psychotropic properties that were discovered 20 years later by Hungarian-born chemist Stephen Sára. But then in 1972, Nobel laureate Julius Axelrod, he discovered DMT in human brain tissue, okay, leading us back to the idea this isn't something you just synthesize. This is something that is in the mind that exists already. So this led to speculation that the compound plays a role in psychosis. People researched that possibility and eventually abandoned it, again, because of all the backlash against research into psychedelics anyway. But this was the beginning of our understanding of what DMT is and what role it plays in these experiences, these shamanistic experiences, because it's always been a part of our brain and it's present in plants such as the ayahuasca.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we talk about it being present in the brain, we're talking about trace amounts of these DMT molecules. So obviously it's not any sort of amount that's going to, say, allow us to accidentally start tripping because somehow there was some sort of trigger that occurred. But it does lead people to question why DMT is in the brain, what sort of role it's playing, and it should be noted that DMT is closely related to serotonin, which is the naturally occurring neurotransmitter that psychedelics affect so widely. And the pharmacology of DMT is similar to that of other well-known psychedelics. So there's definitely a relationship going on there. It's just a question of, again, what sort of role might DMT play in the mind? There have been some people who say that it's produced by the pineal gland, but we don't know that for sure.
Yes, don't go stealing pineal glands thinking you're going to trigger anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. It leads us to this question about whether or not hallucinations are something that are produced normally in nature, and whether or not hallucination is something that humans are supposed to do. I bring this up because there's a 2011 study at Hull University in the UK, which has to do with hallucinating colors.
Yes.
Now, scientists asked a group of pre-screened people to look at a set of gray patterns and try to visualize color. 11 members of the group had been identified as highly susceptible to hypnosis. And then 7 of these subjects were not susceptible at all. The study found that all subjects who were easily hypnotized reported seeing a range of colors even while not under hypnosis. In other words, their brain was hallucinating colors. And then MRI scans corroborated this and showed that the parts of the brain linked to color perception lit up when they saw, in quotations, imaginary hues of colors. So you have this idea coming online that, you know, there are parts of the brain that can work in conjunction to create the reality. And we talked about this 1,000 times, that what we construct as reality is, or I should say rather, our perception really is an approximation of reality. And that each of us is looking at the world in a completely different way. We're just sort of all agreeing on a couple of things to make sure we have some continuity in life.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned that. Because on the subject of DMT, the subject of any of these substances, one of the things that Dr. Catherine McLean brought up, specifically stressing the research environment that they use at John Hopkins, where they have, they don't just inject people with these psychedelic substances and then put them into like a padded room or something.
Yeah, say see you tomorrow.
Right. They have a really calming space that has some, you know, abstract art, has some Buddhas, has some other religious or spiritual iconography, some, you know, comfy couches, and they do a certain amount of priming to, because they don't want to throw somebody into some sort of nightmare trip. You know, they want to send them on a more or less positive trip. They can't guarantee it, but they did find that on, I believe, psilocybin, that outside of a clinical environment, about 30% of the people would say that they had a mystical experience inside of the experiment when they were controlling the in, the environment in which they were taking, you know, and surrounding them with this kind of mystical and calming stuff. They would see a 70% of the test subjects reported having a mystical experience.
So what you're saying is that, again, a lot of it is suggestion,
right?
Right,
and going into it with certain expectations as well. You kind of see that with DMT as well, because I was looking at some of these accounts of what DMT is like. And in a letter to Allen Ginsberg, William Burroughs described his own. And it's, of course, important to note that William Burroughs did a lot of things.
He did a lot of drugs.
Yeah, he did a lot of drugs. So he's maybe not the, you know, a pure test subject, but he reported, like, the first time he took it, it was he felt himself turning into a half man, half woman, and that he was space-time traveling. Whereas your buddy John Horgan, author of Rational Mysticism, he had a totally, well, not a totally different experience, but he had a different take on the experience.
Yeah, he took some ayahuasca because he is very interested, and at the time of writing his book, Rational Mysticism, was trying to get to the bottom of what is a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on in the brain, what's going on with neuroscientists, what's going on with shamans. And so he had the ayahuasca trip, and it was not... it was not probably pleasurable. It did not seem like it was for him. But was it mind-altering? Did it open up his perception? That it seems to have done.
Yeah, he said, quote, "After I threw up, I had a cosmic panic attack in which I was menaced by a malevolent, day-glow-hued polyhedra. I have no desire to repeat this experience."
So. So there you go, kids, if you're thinking about doing the ayahuasca. But it is really important, and this is what McLean says, particularly in her talk at Emory, when she was speaking about therapeutic effects of psilocybin, which is, if you think about it, as shrooms. You've probably heard it on the street, the shrooms. She was saying that it is very important to try to guide the person into having a sort of breakthrough with the experience and having as pleasurable experience as they possibly can, aka not having a bad trip.
Yeah, and that's a part of the whole shamanistic deal too, is that the idea is that you had a guide, there's a certain desired experience that is then, they attempt to create this experience via surroundings, via priming, via a certain story or narrative or mythos surrounding that experience, versus somebody, you know, who just, I don't know, is at a concert and somebody passes them something and they take it. Totally different experiences. One is steeped in expectations and priming and the idea that you're going on a journey, you're going to, attempting to get somewhere, perhaps change something about you, figure something out, and the other is taking something and seeing what happens and watching fireworks.
Right.
As we've been discussing in this episode and the other shaman and the scientist episode, our consciousness is not this, really not this set thing. You know, like I say, you can look at a puppy or a cat and it'll change the way you're thinking and the way you're looking at reality. You know, you can, you have a cup of coffee and your things are going to sharpen or fade in terms of your perception.
The warmth from the cup of coffee,
yes,
will inform your ideas about the person you're talking to, right?
Exactly. And according to Dr. Catherine McLean in this talk that I attended, and you attended in the form of an iPhone.
I was inside, really tiny inside
really
the iPhone.
Really tiny, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you feel in your head around the sort of third eye area, sort of between your eyes, back behind the middle frontal part of the brain, midfrontal cortex, just buried back there in the brain meat, there are two structures that play a key role in maintaining our sense of self in time and space. I mean, two vital like those are the big ones, right? In terms, mm-hmm, of like who I am and how I'm perceiving reality.
How old am I?
Where do I fit in with time? Where do I fit in with space? I mean, mm-hmm, that's like the basic stuff right there.
Well, remember, that was some of the meat of being a person when we talked about personhood.
Right.
This ability to imagine yourself in the past, the present, and the future.
Yeah. So personhood itself, you can isolate to a certain part of the brain that is susceptible to changes.
Mm-hmm.
Something to keep in mind when we're talking about not only how hallucinations and how psychedelics skew the experience of self and the outside world, but also just how susceptible to change our more or less default understanding of self and the outside world is.
Okay. So McLean also brings into question, I think I mentioned this before, that consciousness may not be as coherent as we think it is. So what she shared with everybody is that there's something that makes this even more tricky, and that's the introduction of a drug called salvia denorium. And in an experiment in 2012, they had volunteers take this drug, this hallucinogen. And what they found is that all of these people, all of them hallucinated that they had interactions with entities while on salvia.
Little men, elves, that kind of thing. We're talking, I mean, we're really getting into the whole territory of paranormal experience.
Yes.
And spirits and godlings and whatever else you might want to encounter in the woods.
Now, that's not, I mean, that's weird, right? Just because 100% of the people had, you know, hallucinations specifically about entities. What's weird about this is that when they then had subsequent trips on salvia, they revisited those scenarios and those entities. In other words, those entities became somewhat of a part of the continuum of consciousness.
Yeah, they're able to return to the same. I mean, I'm instantly reminded of dreams, of course, because we're talking about how crazy the idea of encountering an entity is, and it's, you know, and I imagine a number of people's minds are going a little wonky with just the idea of just someone took a substance and then they encountered this being that wasn't real but seemed to have seemed to act of its own volition. Of course, we're constantly having dreams at night in which we interact with things that are essentially entities. We've all interacted with unreal people and unreal things in our dreams. But it is always or very often difficult to return to a dream. Whenever we have even just a motif returns in a subsequent dream, it's something that's noteworthy, much less the encounter with an exact same being or entity.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So then that sort of blurs the line again between what is illusion, what's reality, and what we construct as reality. Now, of course, I'm not saying that everybody should go out there and hallucinate and find an entity and,
right.
and then have conversations with it. I'm just saying that I think it's interesting that it's now coded as a memory and it's part of the continuum.
Right. And it's worth noting McLean's study was a small number of people, mm-hmm. she said, for this, in which she had 100% C entities. And you do encounter plenty of cases where people have claimed to have taken salvia, and they do not experience entities. So,
yeah, true.
Yeah. So this is not a guaranteed ticket to fairyhood.
No. But, of course, her takeaway was, you know, hey, you find some sort of being, and then you pick up the conversation a couple weeks later with that person in your head.
This is a vital part, of course, of shamanistic experience. If one is taking a substance for a spiritual purpose,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because the spiritual accounts, mystical accounts are full of people encountering unreal beings. So we can see exactly where that fits in a shamanistic tradition.
Well, and like William Burroughs, as you spoke of, the half man, half woman. I mean, there's all sorts of encounters, of course. But what I wanted to talk about next is this idea of eyes wide shut, and particularly under the influence of ayahuasca. And I find this interesting because in the talk, they were talking about how ayahuasca and visual processing get really wonky. Because what you're talking about here are the areas of the brain associated with visual processing light. And when you have your eyes open, right, you can see the sort of activity in your brain mm-hmm. going on processing that. What they found, and this is, again, McLean talking about this in the talk, is that people who are on ayahuasca with their eyes shut, having hallucinations, were having the same level of activity in their brains and visually processing as they would in their waking hours and processing the data.
Yeah.
Which is very different from how we normally process data when our eyes are closed.
Yeah, worth noting, too, that not only was the activity in the brain identical to eyes open, it was identical to eyes open in an outside environment, in a very stimulus-filled environment.
Mm-hmm.
They close their eyes, and they're still encountering that much stimuli.
Yeah, which then it sort of plays this idea, you know, that the dream of your consciousness is merging with what your brain is perceiving as reality.
Yeah, I mean, she laid out that a lot of this does come down to this breakdown between the sense of self and other, between mm-hmm. the sense of you and the outside world, and that's part of what's at play here.
Now, she and Rezon talked about the dangers of ayahuasca. They did talk about how this is not taken lightly, particularly with this kind of psychoactive substance, because you apparently have to prepare your body very well for mm-hmm. this type of hallucinogen. And a lot of this has to do with the amount of serotonin that you already have in your brain. So you don't want to mess with these levels.
Right.
And I say that not because I think someone's going to do this, but this was something that they stressed in their talk, is that this is not stuff to play with. This is stuff that they do in the lab. This is stuff that they make sure that people are mind and body prepared for, because even the amounts of cheese with triglycerides that you eat will affect the amount of serotonin in your brain. And if you were to then take ayahuasca and you had a lot of serotonin, it could be very dangerous. It can actually lead to death. So you have to make sure that all the levels are correct.
Yeah. So no matter how much you might want to, in Timothy Leary's words, go on a billion your journey to God, if you have to give up cheese first, I mean, I don't know, because cheese is great.
Gonna booyah? What was that part of the sentence?
Oh, a billion your journey to God.
A billion year. Oh, I thought you said a booyah.
A booyah a booyah journey to God. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That works too, I guess.
No, I think I'm hallucinating. All right, so there's, again, this idea of hallucinations perhaps being a part of the machinery, and particularly when you look at something like meditating monks, Tibetan monks in particular. There have been accounts all over the place about monks being able to meditate to such a degree that they begin to hallucinate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about this before in with hallucinations having something in common with meditating in terms of quieting the default mode network. This chattering part of your brain makes you wonder if, again, through meditation, you can access this same sort of hallucinatory experience, this realm of dreaming, of lucid dreaming even.
Well, it instantly reminds me of mandalas, the idea that Tibetan monks especially will, there's sort of there's the outer mandala, you know, that you see in art depictions. But these are kind of blueprints for a really kind of a thought palace or kind of a memory palace, this kind of mental space that they put their minds in. A place, not, and I mean that in terms of there's actually like a floor plan, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's a way of containing some very complex spiritual ideas. And so creating this crazy structure in their head, it seems similar in many ways to the kind of crazy structure one might encounter, say, on DMT or you know, ayahuasca or one, mm-hmm. of the, one of these substances where one closes their eyes and experiences some sort of amazing architecture or explosions or what have you. The difference being, of course, here that the monk is having to work really hard to achieve this level of calm and concentration and meditative state, whereas the individual taking the substance, not to say that it's easy, not to say that it's necessarily a shortcut, but there's less intense concentration involved in reaching that state.
Now, I don't know if this relates to it specifically in terms of hallucinations, but I do know that there's one practice in meditation where you essentially try to imagine your own decomposition.
Hmm.
And the idea is not just to, you know, try to figure out what your skull would look like, but to try to figure out, you know, how ephemeral life is
mm-hmm.
and how important the present is. And apparently this is something that is very disturbing because it can take over the imagination parts of your brain, right? And as we had discussed in hallucinating color, sometimes what you're talking about here is just sort of making the inference that this will happen and then your mind taking it and running with it.
Yeah, you see that that's actually a motif in a good deal of Tibetan art and some of the mandala and mandala akin creations where you see like flayed men and,
mm-hmm.
and bones and oceans of blood. And it's not like a morbid death metal celebration of that stuff, but it's about the ephemeral nature of things and about the limits of physical existence.
Right. And again, trying to get a better awareness of life and opening up your mind a bit.
Right.
All right. So there's this idea that this, you know, speaking of ephemeral nature, may not be long lasting. But mm-hmm. there's some evidence that the drug use as well as the meditation could have long-term impact. Thinking about Roland Griffins, I believe is his name, and he is the person we talked about his 2011 study of the stage 4 and cancer patients who were taking hallucinogens in order to try to vanquish their very, very obvious, very obviously real fears that were hamstringing them in daily life, their anxieties because of their illness and their disease. I wanted to mention it because what they found is that some of these patients, up to 2 years after their hallucinatory experience, were still garnering the positive effects
mm-hmm.
of their experience. In other words, they had a sense of calmness. They felt very expansive. They no longer worried so much about their own fate or the fate of others. They just sort of were trying to be present in their daily life. And they think, the researchers think, that the reason for this may be very similar to how other memories work. So you've talked about this before. You take out a memory
mm-hmm.
and you examine it. You might change it, tweak it a little bit. It gets stronger in your memory every time you take it out. Well, when the patients went through that experience and they sat down with the researchers and went over it again and again, they think that the same thing was happening. They were establishing long-term memories that were then telling them how they were going to feel about this in the future.
Yeah, that study in particular, I remember one of the keys, first of all, was preparation. They prepared these individuals
mm-hmm.
for their experience, you know, made sure that the environment, the preconceived notions, the expectations of the trip were firmly set in place. And then afterwards, it was then about taking apart what happened, what they experienced, the altered modes of perception and experience that occurred, and, you know, basically journaling about it, taking that memory out, looking at it, learning from it, putting it back, and then, like you say, continuing to take it out. Because every time you take it out, any memory, it's not this little structure sculpted out of rock. It's made out of clay, still malleable clay. And every time you take it out and paw it around in your hands, be it some traumatic memory of childhood or the greatest day of your life, you get it out, you're putting your fingers in it, you're meshing it around, you're changing the shape of it, however slightly.
Yeah, you're resurrecting the neural correlates, right? And making them that much stronger.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which is morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a podcast called Secular Buddhist that McLean was on, and she was talking again about the ability of there to be long-term effects. And she was talking about a 2011 Johns Hopkins University study that gave a high dose of psilocybin to 51 adult participants. And 30 of them, she says, went a measurable personality change that lasted more than a year. Now, when she talks about personality change, they're talking about like five different aspects of personality. And one of them was a trait called openness. And she says that that is the only one that changed with these participants who had the measurable change over a year-long period. Now, she says that of the personality traits that that we know of and we define personality by, that 80% of that is genetic.
Okay.
And so you're sort of born with, you know, these types of personality traits that you're either stronger or weaker in. So you could be stronger or weaker in openness. And she said that it's very interesting that there's not a lot of tweaking you can do with personality, but with this one trait, openness, you could perhaps forge the way to continue to thrive in the space of openness with your personality, and perhaps even vanquish depression as a result, or continue to have an expansive worldview.
Well, this is weird. I'm kind of, maybe it's because we're recording this during the Christmas season, but hearing this, I cannot help but wonder, in A Christmas Carol, does even Ebenezer Scrooge do DMT or consume ayahuasca? Because here you have a curmudgeonly individual, very set in his ways, set in his personality, and then one night he trips his mind out completely and encounters four ghosts, right? He encounters four separate entities who take him on this fantastic voyage through time and space. And then when he wakes up, what's the big change in Scrooge? He's more open, right? He opens the window and he's calling out to children in the street that normally he would just want to beat with a stick. But now he's saying, oh, what day is this, young chap? And then his life is changed. I mean, he's still Scrooge. Like you say, a lot of his personality is still going to be set in stone. But there's that portion of him, that openness that has been altered by the experience.
You're right. He's probably still going to be somewhat thrifty, right?
Yeah.
But maybe he's just going to be a little bit more open in his heart and more available to people.
Yeah.
Hopefully a year from that experience. That's awesome. I'd never really thought about it.
I don't know. I guess, like I say, it's the Christmas time around me, and then talking about all this psychedelic experience and how it can conceivably change somebody.
Well, speaking of those four spirit guides, I wanted to close out with a quote from John Horgan, who talks about how there's this resurgence in hallucinogenic drugs and scientific inquiry, He says, I applaud the psychedelic renaissance with this caveat. Spiritual texts often emphasize the dangers of mystical experiences, whether generated by drugs, fasting, meditation, or other means. That is the theme of an old Talmudic tale in which four rabbis are brought into the presence of God. One becomes a heretic, one goes crazy, one drops dead, and one returns home with his faith affirmed. So I think it's his point of saying all of this is very interesting, but we should not approach this lightly, because what we're talking about here is the mind. And while it's very fertile ground, it is also very fragile.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff. The effects can be long lasting and can literally change who you are. So if you end up going down any of those routes, you know, again, we don't advise it. We don't condone the use of any of these substances. But do put some thought into it and realize that you're talking about some really powerful agents that affect who you are at a very basic level. All right, and if you want to find out more about these topics, I'm sure you do, we have a number of articles on HowStuffWorks.com about it. We have an article about LSD. We have an article about psychedelic mushrooms, a number of articles about how the mind works. In terms of things that we've referenced in this podcast and others, if you live in the Atlanta area, the Jaguar exhibit will probably be gone by the time you hear this, or it certainly will be gone long term. But check out what Emory's doing, because they're always having fascinating exhibits. They always do a big Tibet exhibit every year. They're always bringing in really top shelf presenters to share something in the arts and the sciences, something culturally, something historic. Really cool place, a great university. In terms of stuff that you can obtain without traveling to Atlanta, the book by John Horgan,
Rational Mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very good. I think it was written in 2003, 2004, but a lot of the research is still very much cutting edge, or what people are building on, some of the stuff that he goes through. It's very interesting.
And then on Netflix, the DMT documentary, DMT, The Spirit Molecule, that's available for streaming there, as well as a number of TED Talks that get into, you know, just how the brain works. And then if you want something just a little cheesier, there's some great horror movies about people taking these substances and turning into mindless killers. There's a great movie called Blue Sunshine.
Blue Sunshine, 78.
It's kind of a cheesy but a very interesting horror flick about former flower children who 10 years later all start losing their hair and turning into psychotic killers because they took some sort of tainted LSD back in the day. So anyway, it's all up there if you want to explore it. As for getting in touch with us, again, we would love to hear from anyone who has thoughts on this particular topic. Given the nature of this subject, we may not be able to share everything you share with us with the rest of the listeners, but we're still happy to hear from everybody. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those. You can also find us on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.